south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, oftentimes when you're visiting an average Latin American's home, maybe you've been invited to a birthday party, or possibly they're selling something on OLX.com and you're coming to check it out. Maybe you're going to buy it. Well, if you live down here long enough and you visit enough Latino homes, oftentimes you'll find, when asking the owner if you could use the bathroom, once you get in there, you'll see the garbage can full of toilet paper. You know that old story. Down here in Latin America, almost everyone puts their used toilet paper in the garbage can next to the toilet. Sure, it's a big and disgusting shock at first, but once you find out why, it does make sense. And you longtime listeners know why. It's because they routinely undersize the plumbing pipes in middle-class, lower-middle-class, and standard housing. So, for example, where there's supposed to be a 4-inch drain pipe under the toilet or the sink, it's been reduced to 3 inches in diameter or less. And if it's a 2-inch pipe, reduced to 1.5 or 1 inch in diameter, and on and on. Then you might ask, well, what about standard building codes? They're universal throughout the world now. So how come they keep doing it? Or better yet, how come they keep getting away with it? Thing is, if someone has an idea to build a new house or office building, whatever, the first step is, before any construction starts, the owner or the builder takes the architectural plans down to the municipality to get checked and approved to get a building permit. And they do get approved because they're just looking at the blueprints, and the blueprints are always to code because they're done by regular architects that have graduated from architectural school. They know the codes, but once the building gets started, that's when the hanky-panky begins. I've seen how it works dozens of times. And here's how it usually goes. Let's say a guy wants to build a house for $100,000 complete. Now, down here in Latin America, that'll get you a pretty fine house because you can build a nice house to first world standards for around $30 to $50 a square foot. So even on the high end, at $50 a square foot, $100,000 will get you a 2,000 square foot house. First world all the way. But here's what happens, and this always happens. As the construction gets underway and chugs along, and it does take about a whole year to build a decent house here in Latin America, at least a house first world style. Not because the workers are slow or lazy or any of that. It's because of the rainy season. You got 6 months of the year where it's just a pain in the ass to do anything on the exterior. And that's why you can actually build a nice house in 6 months if you're the first one to get the contractor to start building as soon as the rainy season ends. Generally in late October or November. So it's definitely worth it to duke him an extra $500 ahead of time to be first on his construction list. And that's what I always recommend if you're building a house. Get first on the contractor's list. Make sure your house gets started in late October or November. Then if he's got a decent crew, you just might get your nice house done in 6 months or so. Otherwise, forget about it. It's going to take a year. Because you see, the trick is to get the foundation poured and the house basic structure completed before the rainy season. Then you go inside and finish off there. If not, the rain and the weather will be in control of your project, not you. So your number one priority should be, if you're building a house or an office building, whatever, to get that roof in place by the start of the rainy season, which is normally in May. So again, the best time to start a construction project is always in October or November. Yep, even with the recent climate change stuff, the rainy and dry seasons are still very predictable. But I digress. Where were we? Oh yeah, talking how Latin American builders always downsize the plumbing tubes. And you know, they don't have to. It's just that, just like with any construction project around the world, you've got a budget. In this case, we're talking about a $100,000 house. Well, I don't know if you've ever built a house or had a building project going, but I can tell you this. As the construction chugs along and you do walkthroughs to check on the progress, I guarantee you, you're going to change a few things. Maybe more than a few things, too. You're going to add lights and electrical outlets and change the trim and detail. Because as the project starts to form and you actually see what it's going to be like, there will be things you haven't considered along the way and you will change them. And every change costs money. Not to mention the fact that if a project is running at least 6 months, possibly a year, the price and availability of materials will change too as you chug along because you won't buy all the material at once before it starts. You'll buy it along the way. I mean, look, just this year, because of the COVID stuff, of course, the price of concrete and steel have gone up around 33%. And even in the best of times, prices for raw materials and straight building supplies never go down. They only go up. So this is what happens. As you get towards the end of the project, let's say you're 80 or 90% finished. Well, your contractor or builder will have a powwow with you and tell you, well, you know, we thought it was going to be 100 grand, but it's really going to be 115. We're sorry. Sure, you're going to be pissed. But if you're a gringo, you'll argue a bit, but you're not going to fight it to the death. You'll grin and bear it and kick in the extra 15 G's. However, if you're a Latino and that's your building project, when you hear the fact that it's 15 G's over budget, 98% of the time you'll say, wait a minute, that was the deal, 100 G's, I don't have any more. That's all the bank gave me or all I have and that's all I'm willing to pay for. So what do you think happens then? It's time to start cutting corners. And where do you cut corners? In areas you can't see, like in the walls, under the floors, in the concrete mix. For example, as far as the electrical work, you can't see 90% of that stuff. It's in the walls. So then what will your contractor do? He'll cheap out and scale down and get thinner wiring. And thinner wires have less amperage carrying capacity. And when it's finished, no one will be the wiser. Not normally, because the lights in the refrigerator and the TV will still work. However, as more appliances come online, especially things like microwave ovens and those suicide shower heads that really draw the amperage, well, the wiring in the walls is more likely to get warm and pop the breaker box. You know, code within the walls for standard wiring is 12-gauge wire. That's for a standard 20-amp circuit breaker. But you could use a lot thinner wire, 14 or even 16-gauge wire, and no one will know or see it. People cutting corners here in Latin America do that all the time. And of course, it won't be to code, for reasons just outlined. And of course, it's much cheaper. Same with the pipes. A 4-inch pipe is a lot more expensive than a 3-inch diameter pipe. A 1-inch diameter, much less expensive than a 1.5 or 2-inch. You get the picture. And that brings us full circle back to the bathroom you were using in the house you got the invite to. The one with the midget toilet, because that toilet's cheaper than a standard model. So again, don't be shocked if the garbage can next to the toilet is filled with used toilet paper. How gross, huh? Oh, and note that 95% of all bathrooms in Latin America do not have exhaust fans, even though 95% of bathrooms absolutely need them because, you know, if you got a garbage can sitting next to the toilet full of used toilet paper, well, let's just say in no way is it a pleasant olfactory experience. That'd be the one place a COVIDiot mask does come in handy. So then why no exhaust fan? They're cheap and easy to put in, right? Well, cheap and easy to us from up in the States. And they are available in all hardware stores down here, but they cost probably around $50. And that's the problem, the cost. $50 for the average Latino is a couple of days' work, whereas a first world person can earn that in an hour or two. That's why you won't see any exhaust fan in the average Latino's house. But that's not the only problem. More often than not, you'll notice the last person in didn't flush. Talking about pee now, number one. Though almost never number two. That would really be a revolting development. So when you walk in, almost never number two. Thank Buddha for small favors, huh? But you will see number one on occasion. And I used to think early on it was a sign of bad manners, you know. Just crude behavior. Or some cultural lacking or defect. My first impressions were wrong. It was none of those things, but there was definitely something lacking. They were lacking 24/7 water pressure. So if you're brought up under those circumstances, you learn quickly when the water is not flowing 24/7 that if you flush the toilet anytime you feel like it, there will be times the tank is empty and you get no flush at all, which is much more tolerable when it comes to pee. But number two, So at a very early age, Latinos learn to preserve that last flush for the solid stuff. That means in many houses, the pee gets flushed maybe every other time. Now, that little disagreeable custom that I did not learn about for a long, long time made me think when I had Latino visitors to my own house that they too were somehow culturally lacking. Because you see, they carry those habits everywhere they go. You know, they talk about racially profiling people. Well, down here you just can't help but economically profile people. Yeah, right, like first world people don't economically profile each other all the time. You know, rappers and ghetto dwellers and their bling and white boys forever trying to keep up with the Joneses. For example, I know for sure when I've got Latino guests over at the house and I walk into the bathroom, my bathroom, and see that there's still pee in the toilet, I know immediately they live in a downscale neighborhood or in a town out in the boonies. Now, I gotta tell you, at first that little scenario caused me some embarrassment way back when the brother of my Latina girlfriend came to visit. He lived a couple hundred miles away in a little town out in the boonies. So when he came to the big city, I put him up for a few days. Problem was, like clockwork, every time I'd go into the guest bathroom, there'd be pee in the toilet every time. And finally, on the third day, I said to my girlfriend, I didn't want to embarrass him or me, but that's how it worked out. I said, please, won't you tell your brother to flush the damn toilet? Was he born in a barn? And guess what? She got pissed off at me. She said, Johnny, don't you know that in the little towns out in the campo, out in the boonies, they only have water a couple hours a day? She said, my brother's not crude. He's got manners. He's not a brute. So she laid into me, not him. Oh, and of course, he did put his used toilet paper in the garbage can next to the toilet. And I thought, thank Allah, I've got a cleaning lady and I don't have to deal with that crap. Pun intended. By the way, that's the reason why if you ever fly into Miami International Airport or Houston or LAX and you walk into one of the big community bathrooms there and you see the garbage can filled with used toilet paper, I mean, really, how can you miss a thing like that? Well, that's when you know and you can be 100% sure that a flight from south of the border recently disembarked with a load of Latin Americans. Pun intended again. Mostly lower and middle class Latin Americans, that is, because upper class Latinos, those in the upper 5 or 10% of income, have nicer homes with plumbing that's to code and water 24/7. So then you might logically ask, what are middle and lower middle class Americans doing flying into Miami? Where do they get the dough for that when they haven't got water 24/7? Or a cistern or decent plumbing pipes that are up to code? Well, it's because practically every single Latin American has a couple of relatives up in the States. And, you know, once they've got their green cards and their residence in good standing, they can sponsor family members to come over. So their family members up in the States who are legal and are living the American dream are paying for those flights, too. And, of course, you remember the remesa thing, right? In Mexico alone, I was reading something like $4 billion a month in remesas go south of the border from families living up in the States, just to Mexico. Now, get this, and I'm sure you haven't heard this before. According to the popular website Statistica, where you can get all kinds of statistics, the estimated total amount of dollars it cost the United States government to deport illegal immigrants from the U.S. to wherever they happen to have originated in Latin America is around $200 billion U.S. dollars a year. And the average amount of remesas, that's the amount of dollars sent back from Latino families and persons living in the United States to their families back home in Latin America, is around $100 billion a year. That means, and again, you've surely not heard this before, it costs the United States taxpayers, well, they're just printing money these days, so it doesn't cost anyone anything, right? Well, either way, it costs twice as much to deport all of the illegal aliens they round up each year than the amount Latinos are sending back to their families back home in Latin America. Now, if you think about it, that means the U.S. would actually be better off telling all those families up in the States sending remesas south of the border, I'll tell you what, let's make a deal. You tell your friends and family south of the border to stay put. Don't come to the States, and we'll send them twice what you've been sending them in remesas every month, forever and ever. Then you wouldn't need a wall at all, would you? Isn't that one of the most twisted pieces of data you've ever heard? I want you to think about that for a minute. It certainly is a bizarre world, isn't it? Think that'd work? It just might. Because, you know, the thing you always hear from immigrants is that they're coming to the U.S. to have a better lifestyle, right? Escape poverty and all that. And if you woke listeners out there don't like that little bit of reality, you don't like the numbers I've been crunching to come up with those conclusions, just go to statistica.com and you'll find all that data. Though I don't expect woke people to agree with it because that's one thing they really hate, when the real facts conflict with their version of the facts. By the way, do you ever wonder what your chances are if you're an illegal immigrant of getting caught and deported? Well, according to Princeton University sociologist Douglas Massey, co-director of the Mexican Migration Project, in his long-term study collaborating with other universities to track migration, his study states the probability for apprehension for an undocumented immigrant crossing the border is approximately 20%. The study came up with those conclusions based on interviews with households in Mexico about their trips to the U.S., as well as interviews with Mexican immigrants in the U.S. With the probability of apprehension in any year given as the number of apprehensions in that year divided by the number of observed attempts to cross the border. Now, I don't know of anyone who has ever mentioned that statistic. And down here in Latin America, as long as you pay the local expediter $5 or $10 grand, that amount guaranteed by you and your family, of course, the coyote expediter says they'll always get you through in one piece. That's what you assume when you pay that kind of dough, right? However, the real statistics are 4 out of 5 will get through. Though I've been told if you go through an expediter, remember, one of those guys exists in every town and city in Latin America, kind of like the local godfather of the coyote business. Those guys claim to get more than 90% of their people through. And they'll tell you that the ones that do get nabbed are people that don't have the money to pay coyotes and they try to go it on their own. And the odd thing is, and I don't know whether to believe this or not, these local coyote godfather types, people and the relatives of people who've gotten through by paying those guys, say that when you use those guys, it's almost a sure thing. And all those stories you hear about the rapes, the robberies, and the human trafficking and all that, well, that won't happen to you if you paid a $5 to $10,000, whatever the going rate happens to be in the moment. That is basically your insurance policy against all that stuff. You won't believe how many Latinos have told me that exact story. So maybe, just maybe, all those stories you hear about the rapes and the dead bodies and robberies are pretty much the exclusive domain of people who don't pay the local town coyote godfather in advance. They tell you bad things are bound to happen if you try to do it on your own. But half the people do just that, especially cocky adolescent boys with no skills and not much education. Again, it's hard to know the numbers and the absolute truth. Though the longer you're down here, the more stories you'll hear right from the horse's mouth, too. All right, changing gears, here's something really interesting. Now, you know I always recommend you buy a decent car, but not a brand new high-end one, because you can find so many lightly used cars in almost perfect condition. In fact, used cars in great condition are amazingly cheap. Of course, you have to look around to find those deals, but they're there all right, especially in Mexico and Central America, because it's supply and demand, and there's a huge overabundance of supply. And it's all due to the fact there's a huge business in buying wrecked cars at auction houses in Texas and bringing them down and fixing them. They fix them down here because the labor's so cheap. In fact, fantastic body men down here make between $20 and $30 a day. Not per hour like good body men up in the States, but per day. So wrecks, even ones with tons of necessary body work, can be repaired for a song. The thing that'll run up a bill is if you've got specific parts you have to order online, like brake and headlight assemblies, you know, the clear plastic reflectors and housings that are specific to each car. Now, those things can be expensive. But still, basic body work is so cheap and good. That makes it completely worthwhile to bring a junk down to Guatemala, Honduras, Mexico, whatever, and fix it completely, as long as it's a late model and the interior isn't destroyed. So for years, even decades, it's been a huge business. But now you see, especially since this COVIDiot thing, most all Latin American countries north of Colombia, that'd be all the Latin American countries you could drive to from the States, have a huge oversupply of nice, used, late model cars. And do note that certain Latin American governments are against the practice of bringing wrecked cars down and fixing them up, because for them, there's no money in it, and you'll see why in a second. For example, just this month, Guatemala placed restrictions on the importation of used vehicles, and here are some of the newest regs. So pay attention, especially if you plan on driving your own car down, which can be a good thing. Anyway, the new regs for Guatemala say that if you have a car that's 6 years old or newer, you can bring it into the country, no problem. But if it's 7 years old or older, if the motor doesn't turn over when you try to start it, will not be allowed into the country. The new regs say that a test will be done to verify physically at the moment it crosses the border, the moment the importation papers are viewed. If the car doesn't turn over, it doesn't start, it will not be allowed in. Obviously, we're talking about cars that are being brought in on flatbeds or being towed. Because if you happen to be driving your car down, obviously the engine does start or you wouldn't be driving it. Then there's other Latin American countries like Costa Rica who have much stricter importation laws. The thing is, in Costa Rica, you can't import a car that has been registered on its title as a total loss. Now, that might not sound like much of a problem for you. You're not going to buy a car or bring it down if it's a total loss. Why would you? But it's always been a lucrative business. Latino body shops in Mexico and in Central America going online, buying late model cars at auctions in Texas that are total losses. And it says so right on their title. In fact, body shops here in Latin America tend to prefer cars that have been totaled because then they pay a very low import tax when they're going through customs. For example, some countries will only charge $500 to get the car in and that's it. Then you completely repair the thing and you're good to go. Whereas cars that aren't a total loss will have to pay import tax based on their blue book value. Take, for example, a 2018 Toyota 4Runner. If it's been sideswiped, let's say, it's not a total loss. Though it will cost thousands to fix up in the States, it's really not a total loss. Thing is, if you drive it down to Latin America, the body work will be super cheap. But the blue book value on a car like that is probably $25,000. And import taxes can be around 30%. So that's around $7,000 in taxes. A tremendous hit. But if you could pick up a 2018 4Runner at an auction in Texas that's been totaled, Or at least it says it's a total loss on the title. In most countries here in Latin America, it'll cost you only $500 to get it in. That's a big difference. Well, as you just heard, Costa Rica has closed that loophole. You can't bring in a totaled car anymore. Why? Because the Costa Rican government wants to bleed you dry with taxes. Surprise, surprise, huh? And if the car is totaled, they only get $500. If it's not, they get 30% of Blue Book, which is around $7,000. That's about how the numbers work out with a 2018 Toyota 4Runner. By the way, the image you get in your mind of a totaled car, it's not always what you might think. Most likely, you'd be thinking the car's smashed to smithereens and there's no use fixing it, not in the States anyway. Well, I've visited some body shops here in Latin America and they've showed me some of the cars they've imported from Texas auctions. And though the titles may say they are total losses, really, they're not a total loss at all. It's just that to fix a car like that up in the States would cost thousands and thousands of dollars. So the insurance company deems it a total wreck. For example, here in Latin America, a long time ago, I had a 4Runner that got rear-ended. And a special hydraulic electric hatch door was all mangled and the back end looked like an accordion. And it cost $2,000 down here to fix. A gringo expat friend of mine whose brother had a body shop up in the States looked at it and he said, up there, it would have been a $5,000 repair for sure. So a car in an auction that's declared a total loss is not necessarily that at all. Oh, and there's also a bit of hanky-panky going on with those auction houses up in the States. They know some of their best customers are Latino body shops, and they do at times finagle with the title to make it look like a total loss, so their Latino customer does not have to pay taxes on the Blue Book value. But as you can see with the case of Costa Rica, Latin countries are starting to plug those loopholes. And obviously, since Costa Rica is the most gringoized, first world wannabe copycat country, when laws get changed and tightened up down here, Costa Rica is always the first Latin country to pull a trigger. Meanwhile, we've got reason 4,227 why I'd never want to have my plan B in Ecuador. Nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. Used to be a very nice plan B place to live, but you know how things change. Especially when AARP, International Living, and all the expat rags and blogs tell you that's the number one place to go. And before that was Costa Rica. And look what the gringos and expats did to Costa Rica. Then it was Panama, and look what they did to Panama. And now what you've got is first world cost of living all the way. Especially first world gringo style real estate. And then again, if you've got a lot of dough, you can live anywhere. But really, no matter how much dough you have, who wants to pay gringo prices? So anyway, I don't know if you knew this or not, but Ecuador's on its second weekend of a 28-day health emergency lockdown. Such BS, really. It's politics over intelligence once again. So anyway, we're in that second weekend of this lockdown, and guess what happened? The cops were extremely busy last weekend, arresting curfew violators and locking up what they've been calling illegal partygoers. Here's the stats, and man, have they gone crazy in Ecuador. The National Police report breaking up 583 parties last weekend, making 516 arrests for curfew violations and issuing more than 1,000 fines to drivers on the streets without a legitimate reason to be out there. And this has to make you laugh. It says 9 brothels operating in violation of the lockdown restrictions were also closed down. And now get this, according to Juan Zapata, president of the National Emergency Operations Committee for the government of Ecuador, says, quote, and I'll translate this the best I can. It's hard to even say this with a straight face. He says, quote, fornication or other sexual acts among strangers are not allowed during the emergency lockdowns. So strangers, no. Casual acquaintances, maybe. So anyway, just this weekend, Ecuador has issued more than 1,000 fines. So really, in the age of COVID, sociopathic politicians are finding ways to make money off the deal. But you knew that already, right? And now an email from Travis the Felon. He said, Johnny, as always, I love and appreciate your show. This particular email is a request for your water filtration system. Wanted to tell you I'm still on probation and my particular charge stops me from obtaining a passport. But I hope to get off early sometime this year and then get that passport and get the hell out of Dodge. I figure it's about time I should start using a good water system, too. I've saved up some dough from my pizza delivery job. That's a pun. But I really made money thanks to you. Bitcoin, man. What amazing advice you gave. I'm not rich, but I've tripled my investment, and I'll be sitting on it just like you advise. Hopefully, I can start a business down there in Latin America using the gringo advantage. If you have time, though, and feel like it, I'd love to hear more about your dog days of summer job, that is, picking up dead dogs and critters on the road, because I can't imagine a worse job. Once again, thanks for all that you do. And if you have anything else you think of that might be helpful, please talk about it or send it my way. Who knows? Maybe I can catch the next seminar. Sincerely, Plan B Bound Felon Travis. Well, you know, Travis, it's good to know that you're doing okay. And I'm still number one with a bullet with ex-cons and guys in the slammer. Hey, nothing against it. My buddy expat Eddie did a month in the slammer for a noble cause. He was sticking up for a girl who was getting hassled by a drunk guy in a bar. In the end, he clocked the guy and gave him a concussion, so he did time for that. Not to mention, both my brothers have spent time in a drunk tank, and a lot of high school and college guys I know did some time for marijuana. And now that weed is being legalized state by state, having done jail time in the past for it is really no stigma at all. Oh, and about that summer job I had at the street department in Chicago picking up dead dogs and other creatures, very few people had been able to top that as one of the worst jobs. But a buddy of mine, his summer job at that very same time takes the cake, but mostly for unintended consequences. Allow me to explain. He got a job that they offered me too, but I turned it down because it was a second shift job and I didn't want to work days, and lucky too. I was very tempted though because it paid something like $20 an hour, and at the street department I was only making $5. And back then, $20 an hour was unusually high. There had to have been something wrong with that job, and there was. Though it was a legit job, all right. It was to clean out the holding tanks at the Zion, Illinois nuclear power plant. You know those big cooling towers you see when you drive past a power plant? Well, they shut them down every once in a while, and people go inside those things and clean them out. That was the job. Of course, you got to wear all the protective gear and stuff, and he did. He made a ton of money that summer and even bought a new car. Man, were we jealous. A Pontiac GTO. A goat. So anyway, he took off for college out of state, and I lost track of him. However, 10 years later, I ran into him again. He said, remember that job I made all that money on, cleaning those Zion nuclear power plant towers? Well, he said there was a reason it paid $20 an hour. He told me he developed some weird abscesses in his jaw and had to have a bunch of teeth pulled. And the oral surgeon told him that for some reason his jawbone was unusually soft. He hadn't seen that before. Not a young 20-something guy that practically had no cavities at all. I said, man, that sucks. You're going to sue, right? And he shook his head and he said, I don't know. When we signed on for the job, he said, all of us, all five of us on the crew, had to sign a release form, a waiver. I said, really? That can't hold up in court. But as far as I know, he never did sue, and I didn't see the guy again. Hopefully he's still around. And as for the other guys, well, he said, they had problems too, though he didn't elaborate. Nice, clean, safe nuclear power, the energy of the future. Ain't that right, Bill Gates?
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.